Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. We're always looking at real estate, but even the bigger picture from that, and there is so much going on in the world. Inflation, deflation, recession, depression, our dollar crisis. Which is it? Well, we've got a great guest to help us talk about that today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Joining me, our co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
One of the coolest things about being the Real Estate Guys is we get to talk to a lot of folks who are in real estate markets and real estate niches, who are developing real estate, holding real estate, managing real estate. But we also spend time talking to folks that look at the bigger picture. And I think one of the big distinctions between our show and other shows, not good or bad or better or worse, is just that we like to bring our heads up out of just real estate and look at the bigger picture, because it's an economic sea that all investment types float in. And if you are just myopic about real estate, you may run into trouble the way we did back in 2008.
Yeah, this situation is actually pretty unique, because in 2008, you had a crisis that really began allegedly on Main Street with subprime borrowers and the mortgage-backed securities, their mortgages were pulled into, creating some stress in Wall Street. It eventually bled out into becoming a global crisis, and then the lack of credit, or the implosion of the credit markets, manifested into job losses and labor issues. And then, of course, once people lose jobs, then more debt goes bad and it kind of cascades. The difference here is this is a health crisis that manifested in a global economic lockdown, which meant that instead of the credit crisis coming first and leading to job losses, which compounded the credit crisis, instead we have job losses right out of the gate in a bigger fashion than we've ever seen in our lifetime, and not just in the United States, but all around the world. And so it seems to make sense that the resulting credit crisis would end up being even bigger. So it makes a lot of sense then to talk to someone, as we're going to do today, that actually looks at the world from understanding the credit markets on a global level and how all of those things play together.
And we've kind of got our head here right now because we're just about to release the first in our crisis webinar series. You've been hearing about it for the last weeks, and we've come to the conclusion that it's just way too behemoth of a project to have just to be a single webinar. It would be like 6.5 hours. So instead, it's going to come out piece by piece, day after day, and you're going to dig it. And so we're talking to folks who are not just real estate people. In fact, very few real estate people, because we're trying to get our head around this. And that led us to rekindling our relationship and friendship with Richard Duncan, who's an economist and author. We've had a chance to have Richard on the program a few times. He's actually been on the show a couple of times when we've done our prediction panels at the beginning of the year. His amazing book, The Dollar Crisis, which was a mind opener when we first read it, is one of several books he's written, and he's got a tremendous background. And I think that's why we want to tap his brain today.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Richard, PhD economist, so we happen to like running around with these PhDs, guys that are all heck of a lot smarter than we are. And he's an insider. I mean, he was an advisor to the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. He lives in Thailand. So he even though he's an American, American educated, and he cares about America, he really sees a much bigger picture. And he sees how the dollar, he sees how the Federal Reserve, he sees how the American economy and the components that make all of that up fit into the bigger picture. But I think even the more important thing is, this is a guy who actually has advised the people that I call the wizards behind the curtain, the people that have their hands on the levers of power running the banking system. You know, so he understands a little bit about how they think. He understands a little bit about what they study, what they are interested in knowing. He provided some of that information and insight. And so even if you disagree with him or disagree with them, that's not the point. The point is, as Robert Kiyosaki has taught us, when you're listening to somebody who is qualified to have an opinion, and clearly Richard is, then you have to concentrate really hard on listening to what it is they have to say and trying to process the data and the information the way they do and understand their logic. And when you begin to do that, you sometimes gain great insights and actionable intelligence. But if nothing else, you just learn to anticipate a little bit more the moves and the results and potential consequences to you when those people behind the curtain start yanking on those levers.
You know, I think the fact that he sees the global picture is a reason he's earned the right to have that opinion. We all tend to be very centric on our market. So if you live in the United States, that's the lens you look through. We have listeners in more than 190 countries, so they don't all look through that same lens. And today we're going to get a peek behind the global curtain, if you will, when we come back. Richard Duncan, today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
This is Brad Sumrock, and over the past 16 years, I've helped thousands of people invest profitably in real estate. I specialize in helping people syndicate large apartment buildings so that they can be business owners and investors. In today's competitive environment, it's even more important than ever to leverage an experienced mentor, invest in your education, and have a team of advisors that has established relationships nationwide. And with the new Trump tax laws, apartment investors are positioned now better than ever before to pay even less in taxes.
Learn how you can invest in apartments and get ready for the upcoming buying opportunities. Join Brad Sumrock on July 18th and 19th in person in Dallas, Texas, or via live stream from anywhere. Send an email to apartmentmastery@realestateguysradio.com for all the details. I'll be at the live event. Will you? Join Brad and me live or online. Just send an email to apartmentmastery@realestateguysradio.com.
Having trouble finding deals where the numbers make sense? Invest in an asset class that delivers cash flow to you in good times and bad, and where most of that cash flow is tax-free. I'm Dave Zook. Many of you have heard me speak at Real Estate Guys events or heard me on their podcast. My team is a top 5 ATM operator in the country, and right now accredited investors can make cash flow returns well into the double digits and get huge tax deductions. For your free report on this lucrative asset class, email atm@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hans. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. If you want to expand your consciousness, expand your wealth, expand your future, and have more delight and excite in your future than in your past, keep listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com. We're talking about the economy, inflation, deflation, recession, depression. What is the deal? Our guest today is economist and author Richard Duncan, who we were first introduced to over 10 years ago by our friend Robert Kiyosaki. Since then, he's been on the radio show a few times, but we don't see him very often because he lives on the other side of the world and, in fact, is coming to us today from Thailand. Richard has worked as an equity analyst, an investment strategist, as well as a consultant for the International Monetary Fund. But most folks in our audience likely know him from his great book, The Dollar Crisis: Causes, Consequences, Cures. Let's say hello to Richard Duncan. Hey, Richard.
Hey. Thanks for having me on. Nice to see you.
Well, it's good to see you. And how is COVID-19 and sheltering place, all that working for you in Thailand?
Well, so there's good news from Thailand. The virus seems to be dying out here. We've been in the low single digits for new cases for more than a week now. In total, in Thailand, there have only been 3,300 cases. And that's truly miraculous because back in January, at the peak of the virus in China, Thailand literally had somewhere around 1 million Chinese tourists in Thailand. So you would have thought it would have exploded and everyone here would have it by now. But it has spread very slowly. And I think, you know, I could be entirely wrong, but I believe it's because Thailand is hot and sunny and humid. And so I believe that offers a good reason for hope that when the summer really hits the northern hemisphere, this will die down there as well. So the news is good here.
Excellent. Well, of course, a big premise of this entire discussion we're having is there is the whole health and physicality side and sheltering and social distancing that everyone's dealing with. But not only have people contracted the coronavirus, but so is the economy. And you've been speaking to that quite a bit. So maybe big picture on that. One of the things you've mentioned is just the tremendous dip in GDP, which seems obvious when you look at unemployment and so forth, but paint the big picture for us where you can kind of explain what's happened in light of coronavirus in the world economy.
Okay, well, so since Asia was hit by this virus before the US was, it was pretty clear that it was going to come your way. So I've been doing a lot of MacroWatch videos on this. The first one was on March 1st. The one on March 15th was called Recession or Depression. And that was before people were calling this a depression. But my point in that video, and there have been four or five more on the subject since then, but the point of the recession or depression video was the thing that's going to determine whether this is just a recession or a full-fledged 1930s-style depression is going to be the speed and the magnitude of the government's fiscal and monetary policy response, because the economy is in complete free fall. The Atlanta Fed, they have an economic model that they call GDP Now, and it's forecasting, they're forecasting in this model that the economy is going to contract by 42% in the second quarter, negative 42% GDP. That gives you some idea of the magnitude of this calamity. But we've been really fortunate because the government has acted really quite quickly. They've come through now with almost $3 trillion of fiscal rescue bills already. And they now have another $3 trillion bill that's passed the House, I believe. And meanwhile, the Fed has radically expanded the amount of money that it's created. So far this year, the Fed has created $2.75 trillion new dollars. That's increased the size of their total assets by 66% this year. So the government's spending money to replace all the money that's not being spent by households and businesses, and therefore they're holding the economy together. They're keeping our economy from completely collapsing. And if they spend enough, and if the Fed continues to print enough, then there's no reason that we have to collapse into a protracted decade-long depression the way we did in the 1930s. But it's going to be absolutely crucial that the government keeps spending. This first $3 trillion is just the down payment. I expect the full bill is going to be somewhere closer to $10 trillion. And the Fed will probably have to create $10 trillion and finance all of that. But if they do, then our economy will survive and we'll come out on the other side looking rather similar to the way we went into the crisis. But if they don't, if the government gets cold feet and stops propping up the economy now, or for some reason the Fed is unable to continue creating money to finance this new government debt, then we really are looking at a catastrophe on the scale of the Great Depression, which, as you know, lasted for 10 years. And never ended by itself. It was never cured by any sort of natural laissez-faire market forces. The only thing that brought the Great Depression to an end was World War II. And during World War II, government debt increased by 5 times in 4 years. And the Fed's holdings of government bonds increased by 11 times in 4 years. So that government stimulus is the thing that finally ended the Great Depression. So that's the sort of situation we're in. if the government doesn't spend enough and the Fed doesn't create enough money, then our economy is going to collapse and remain in a Great Depression scenario far into the future. And who knows how that will ultimately work out in terms of how our democracy holds up in the United States and the geopolitical consequences. Of course, the Great Depression led to Nazi Germany taking over Europe and a militaristic Japan taking over Asia. And then that ended in World War II. So the stakes couldn't be higher. It's absolutely essential that the government continue propping up the economy, holding the economy together the way that it's done so far. And so far they have. Let's hope for the best. But I hope your listeners understand the absolute necessity of this continuing if they want life to go on as they've known it thus far.
Well, let's also hope that those at the government do realize what you've said and they have the incentive. And so far, they've demonstrated a willingness to fire up the printing press, that's for sure. And to your point, that as long as that continues and it's robust enough, we may get through this, but not necessarily unscathed. Because what happens, Richard, when $10 trillion more dollars work their way into the economy eventually? How does that show up? I would think inflation, but we've also heard people, you know, talking about deflation, stagflation. What do you think that might look like if these $10 trillion or whatever the number gets printed?
Well, so initially, of course, we're experiencing deflation now. The oil prices went negative. Commodity prices crashed. People just haven't been spending money. So this is an extraordinary deflationary demand shock that we're at this stage. Now, going forward, looking at back at what happened after 2008, during that crisis, the government debt roughly doubled after 2007. The Fed's total assets expanded by five times between 2007 and 2014. So at the end of 2007, during their 90-year history, the Fed had created $900 billion up to 2007. By the end of 2014, over the next 7 years, they created another $3.5 trillion. So they expanded the money they created by five times in 7 years. So we're nowhere near that stage yet. And that time, all of that expansion of government debt and that expansion, extraordinary expansion of the Fed's money printing, that didn't cause inflation at the consumer price level.
Right.
It did cause inflation at the asset price level, but that was part of the plan. They needed to push up asset prices to create a wealth effect to boost consumption and help the economy grow, because the private sector was weak. It was too heavily indebted. The private sector couldn't take on more debt and spend as they had been doing in the years leading up to 2008. And so the asset price inflation was part of the plan, and it worked. We didn't collapse into a Great Depression then. In 1930, when all the debt from the 1920s couldn't be repaid, the government didn't know what to do, and they didn't do very much. They didn't stimulate the economy with very large budget deficits. The Fed didn't create extraordinary large amounts of money because it couldn't, because back then, all the money the Fed created had to be backed by gold. And they just simply didn't have enough gold to create money on the scale that the Fed can do now. Now the Fed doesn't have to have any gold backing for the dollars that it creates. So it's free to create limitless amounts of dollars to help finance a massive expansion of government debt. So looking ahead, based on the experience of the crisis of 2008, it's by no means certain that we are going to move into a period of significant inflation at the consumer price level. The biggest factor, I think, is not going to be how much money the Fed creates. It's going to be whether or not globalization breaks down. Because globalization is the main thing that's been driving down the inflation rate going back to the early 1980s. Starting in the 1980s, the US started running very large trade deficits for the first time ever. So before that, when we were on the Bretton Woods system or our gold standard, the trade between countries had to balance, because if the US had a big trade deficit, it would have to pay with its gold. and it would quickly run out of gold, and so it could no longer buy things from other countries. But once we no longer backed dollars with gold, then the U.S. discovered it could run very large trade deficits with other countries. And so by buying things from other countries with very low wages, that meant that the government could have much larger budget deficits than ever before, and that the Fed could create much more paper money to stimulate the economy than ever before without causing domestic bottlenecks in the United States, without leading to full employment in the U.S. and wage price inflation and full industrial capacity utilization at all the automobile plants and steel factories, pushing up the cost of goods in the United States. Instead, we could buy things from factories in China where the young women working there were making $5 a day. And we had a global workforce numbering in the billions rather than a domestic workforce in the hundreds of millions. And so this has been extraordinarily deflationary starting in the 1980s. And that's why the inflation rate has come down all the time. And that's why interest rates have come down all that time. And that's why we didn't get a big boost in consumer price inflation, despite the doubling of the government's debt after 2008 and quintupling of the Fed's balance sheet after 2008. So as long as globalization survives, then we're probably not going to see very significant rates of inflation at the consumer price level. Although we may see property prices go higher and stock prices go higher as a result of the new money creation and the government spending. But so the question is, will globalization break down? And here, well, it's not certain. I mean, there were already very serious trade tensions between the United States and China before the virus started. And now things have become very, very much worse between the two countries. And also the United States, the Americans have realized that we can no longer manufacture ventilators or surgical masks or certain types of medicine that we require. So, of course, a certain amount of that manufacturing is going to be brought back to the United States, and that's a good thing. But it's hard to tell to what extent globalization is going to be reversed. If things go really terribly wrong and globalization breaks down entirely and we stop buying things from countries with low-cost labor and start trying to manufacture everything in the U.S. again, then we will move back into a period of high rates of inflation like in the 1970s, double-digit inflation or worse, exacerbated by all the paper money creation by the Fed in recent years and in the years immediately ahead to fight this crisis. But on the other hand, if we just scale back globalization 20%, then there's still a lot of low-wage workers out there, maybe in countries other than China, where we can source goods from, and that would continue to put downward pressure on the inflation rate in the U.S. So rather than having a closed domestic economy the way that we did up until early 1980s because of the Bretton Woods regime, we're now living in a completely different economic environment where there are literally billions of people. In fact, 2 billion people in the world live on less than $3 a day. And I'm sure most of them would be quite quick to take a job offering $10 a day. This is in a completely different economic environment that actually creates new opportunities for the United States that have never existed previously. Because in the past, the government couldn't get away with $1 trillion budget deficits. This year, the budget deficit is going to be just mind-bogglingly large. And the Fed is going to create the money to pay for it. That's never been possible before. If they had tried that before, globalization, we would have had hyperinflation. But in this new economic environment, well, it seems like they can get away with it. They did after 2008. And so they very well may get away with it again. I think there's a good chance that they will.
We're talking with the author of The Dollar Crisis, Richard Duncan. When we come back, we'll talk more about banking, globalization, what Richard calls creditism, and we'll play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Don't be like Charlie, who scans the internet for IRA information, often getting bad information from copycats who have no idea what they're doing. You deserve to work with a reputable firm that specializes in one thing, the EQRP. Lucky for you, Congress just made it possible for you to get up to $200,000 out of your current 401k or TSP, so you can invest that money in real estate or even your own business. Even if you're still working, it's possible to get access to all this money tax-free. Whether you're a full-time investor, a doctor, or a government employee, even if you have employees, the EQRP is your secret weapon. You'll never see this strategy in Money Magazine, only here with the Real Estate Guys. Every major accounting firm in America is quietly sharing this strategy with their wealthy clients, helping them get their funds freed from 401k jail. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we have your solution. With the CARES Act expiring soon, this strategy will be gone forever. The EQRP company is ready to help you unleash your retirement funds now. Want to learn more about this strategy? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com for my special EQRP report today.
When the world changes, investing strategy changes too. The coronavirus is disrupting economies, financial systems, and daily life like nothing in modern history. Sheltering in place might protect you from the virus, but a wait-and-see approach to investing now is like pulling the sheets over your head while the house burns down. It's not the time to be complacent. So we're calling our huge network of thought leaders, seasoned investors, and technical experts to find out what they're seeing, thinking, and doing to mitigate risk and capture opportunity, and we're recording all of it. We're calling it our Coronavirus Crisis Investing Webinar, and it's totally free. All you need to do is register. Remember, mainstream media doesn't talk to real estate investors. They don't understand you because Wall Street pays them not to. That's why the Real Estate Guys are here. To register for the Crisis Investing Webinar, simply send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com. That's crisis@realestateguysradio.com. Real world wisdom is the best vaccine for a healthy financial future. Send your email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com.
This is Gary Johnson, and I'm here to say, listen to the Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. I don't know about you, but I am enjoying the conversation with Richard Duncan. What a smart guy. Before we get back to that conversation, we're going to take a little break here and play real estate trivia. That's your chance to win a prize by knowing the answer to today's real estate trivia question. It has something to do with real estate and something actually to do with the part of the world that Richard lives in. When you hear the question and you know the answer, then quickly send an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. You want to include your name, the answer to the question, and your physical mailing address, because if you get it right, you're going to win an awesome book called Passionistas, Tips, Tales, and Tweetables from Women Pursuing Their Dreams, a collection of amazing stories from great, great women. You're going to dig this book. That could be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on the show, we talked about recent updates that help you unlock retirement account profit potential. We had Damian Lupo on the program. We asked this: what is the most commonly used road material in the world? Well, the answer is bituminous concrete, which is actually known as asphalt in most parts of the world. Even though you might think there are more dirt roads or concrete roads, the real answer is asphalt. There's more asphalt roads than any other type of surface in the world. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Honored to have Richard Duncan with us. He's coming to us from Thailand. Here's our trivia question. Name the national flower of Thailand. Yeah, you know how every place has its own flower and bird and different species. What's the national flower of Thailand? That might be easy for you, or you might have to look it up, but quickly get your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. The first person that gets it right gets Passionistas, Tips, Tales, and Tweetables from Women Pursuing Their Dreams. That's today's real estate trivia question. Our guest today is economist and author Richard Duncan. And one of the things we appreciate about you, Richard, is that you're not just a U.S.-centric guy. You look at the global picture and you study markets worldwide. You know, we started paying attention to China 7 or 8 years ago based on the fact that they were buying a lot of U.S. debt and were concerned that the devaluation of the dollar would have an effect on them. And of course, the whole idea of oil settling in dollars and, you know, China and Russia working together to try to settle those types of transactions outside the U.S. dollar. There's been that move. There's certainly been talk of a gold-backed yuan as a way to, you know, differentiate. But still the dollar today, the reserve currency. When you came out with the dollar crisis, you made a bunch of predictions, many of which have been very true. There's very few folks who really called the 2008 downturn, but you had a lot to say about that. What does that look like now? What does that picture look like moving forward in terms of the dollar and maybe the dollar's status?
So there really is no alternative to the dollar standard. The reason the dollar is the global reserve currency above all else is because the U.S. has such a large trade deficit. For instance, with China, I'm not sure what the statistics will look like this year, but in recent years, China's trade surplus with the United States has been more than $1 billion every day. So we're in the range of $400 billion trade surplus. And what that means is China sells its goods in the United States. It gets paid in dollars. It takes those dollars back to China. And then it has a few choices. It can burn them. It can bury them under the Great Wall, or it can buy dollar-denominated assets with them, like treasury bonds. Now, some people might say, well, they could do something else. They could buy some euros. Well, that's true. They could buy euros. But then whoever they bought the euros from, those people would have those dollars.
Right.
And they would have to buy U.S. Treasury bonds with them. So the reason the dollar is the reserve currency is because we have such a big trade deficit with so many other countries. And as long as China wants to keep selling things to the U.S. and have that surplus with the U.S., it's going to get more and more dollars every year, every day. And it's going to have to take those dollars and invest them in government bonds or something more risky. And that's not going to change. There's nothing they can do about it as long as they want to keep selling things in the United States. And they have to, because their economy entirely depends on it.
Now, Richard, you talk a lot about creditism, which is maybe not a term people are used to, but it's a great concept. We'll have you kind of talk about that. And then how do we see that working with banking? We've seen a big change in people's need to walk into a bank and transact, right? Technology has helped with that. We've certainly seen in the last downturn, a lot of banks in the U.S. got wiped out completely. But the last time we saw a big stimulus like this after the housing crisis of 2008, the word was the money made it to the banks, but didn't all make it further than that. And as you pointed out eloquently, that we didn't see consumer prices really go up, but we did see asset prices. And of course, real estate investors very interested in that. What's the future of banking look like? Is that going to change in any way that you see?
Well, so you ask about creditism. Creditism, I think, is a term that I coined. And what I mean by that is I believe that over the last many decades, our economic system has evolved from capitalism into creditism. Now, the difference between capitalism and creditism is what drives them. Under capitalism, that system was driven, economic growth there was driven by saving and investment. Yep. Businessmen would invest. Some of them would make a profit. They would save that profit and accumulate capital. That's why they called it capitalism, and reinvest that capital. And that's how the process worked. It was pretty slow and difficult, but that's how capitalism worked. But that's not how our system works anymore. Now the growth driver for our system has been credit creation and consumption, and more credit creation and more consumption. And that's replaced saving and investment. So I think creditism is a more appropriate name for our system than capitalism, because credit is the key to making the economy grow. And looking back to the early 1950s, any time that credit grew by less than 2%, the U.S. went into recession. So that's credit adjusted for inflation. Take the credit growth minus the inflation rate. That's credit adjusted for inflation. Every time it grew by less than 2%, then the economy went into recession. And the economy didn't recover until we had another big surge of credit growth. So that happened 8 times between 1952 and 2007. Now, since 2007, credit, first it contracted, not terribly, but some, and that's when the economy almost went into a depression. But then the government jumped in and expanded its debt it more than doubled its debt. So total credit is equal to total debt. So you can talk about it in terms of credit or debt. So if you think about it, it's all the debt in the country, government debt, household sector debt, corporate debt, financial sector debt, all the debt.
Yep.
The debt has to grow by at least 2% or we go into recession. So after 2008, it recovered and it was just growing just right at the 2% level. But that wasn't enough really to make the economy grow. So the Fed jumped in and gave the economy a supplement by driving up asset prices through very, very low interest rates for many long years and quantitative easing. And that pushed up the wealth of the household sector double between 2009 and 2019. By the end of 2019, the wealth of the American households had climbed to $120 trillion, twice as much as it had been in 2009. And that new wealth, nearly $60 trillion of wealth, drove the economy. And so that's how the government directed the economy and prevented the depression after 2008. But then the coronavirus hit, and this was a real blow to creditism, a double blow, because first of all, the asset prices started crashing. The stock market was down 35% at one point. And then it was quite clear that households were going to begin defaulting on their mortgages, their car loans, their credit cards. Small and medium-sized businesses were going to go bankrupt, and large corporations were going to go bankrupt. And this was going to occur on such an enormous scale that all the banks were certain to fail. And if the banks had collapsed, then all the savings in the banks would have been destroyed. This would have been a recipe for a greater depression. So this was a real life-threatening blow, double blow to creditism, to our economic system survival. And so far, the government has managed to keep creditism alive by expanding U.S. debt by an extra $3 trillion over the last few months. And the Fed's created a similar amount of money over the last few months. They're going to have to continue doing this. And so you ask about the banks. Well, giving them a lot of confidence they don't deserve fully, their tier one capital at best was roughly 10% of their total assets. So that means their assets are their loans and their investments. So it only would take 10% of their loans to default before all their capital would be destroyed.
Okay.
I mean, not talking about breaching their capital requirement ratios. We're talking about every last cent of their capital being wiped out, which is the definition of bankruptcy. That would have happened before now without the government intervention. There would be no banks now had the government not intervened. And so the banks are being kept alive now by this government debt that's being handed out to households and small and medium-sized companies and large corporations so that they could all continue paying their debt to their banks. Without this, the banks would all be history now. So it's absolutely outrageous that banks are still paying dividends and even considering going back to share buybacks anytime soon and continuing with their enormous bonus pools. No, the banks need to be forced to acknowledge they have only survived because of the massive government debt U.S. taxpayers have taken on, that's kept them alive. Therefore, we need to reassess the future of banking in terms of no more share buybacks, no more dividends for far into the future, and very significantly higher tax rates, in my opinion. Now, we've radically cut the taxes on corporations and banks. Last year, U.S. corporations paid a lower tax rate relative to GDP than at any time since 1934. Now that these companies are only surviving thanks to the intervention of the government, which they often criticize, and they often almost always demand lower tax rates. Now, I don't think a 50% tax rate on the banks would be unjust in any way going forward, so that they can repay the American taxpayers the money that the taxpayers have given them that have kept them alive.
All right. Well, speaking of banks and of debts, the other thing real estate investors are always concerned with is the availability of credit so that they can purchase real estate with leverage and interest rates. Oh, my gosh. Right. All-time lows. Is there a scenario under which interest rates can be raised, would be raised, or do you think we're going to see this low interest rate environment for the foreseeable future?
I think we're going to see a very low interest rate environment for the foreseeable future. In the olden days, back when dollars were backed by gold, there was only a certain amount of money. So it was the demand for money that determined interest rates. if the government wanted to borrow a lot of money and spend a lot of money and have a large budget deficit, that increased demand pushed up interest rates because there was only a limited amount of money. But that's not the world we live in anymore. Now we live in a world where the Fed can expand the supply of money as much as it wants. And so now it's no longer just the demand for money that determines interest rates. It's the intersection. It's where the demand and the supply for money meet. And this can be entirely controlled now by the Fed. So for example, if the government has a $10 trillion budget deficit and has to borrow $10 trillion, then if the Fed wants interest rates to go down, the Fed can create $11 trillion and buy $11 trillion of government bonds and push up their price and push down their yields. On the other hand, if the Fed wants interest rates to go higher, they can only print $9 trillion of money and buy $9 trillion of bonds. And then that extra demand from the government that's not met by the Fed will push up interest rates. And if the Fed wants to hold interest rates exactly where they are, then it prints $10 trillion and buys all the new government bonds. So we're in a world now of yield curve control, where the central bank can control the interest rate at any level that it chooses, just like Japan has been doing now for years. In Japan, the government's debt is, before this crisis, was roughly almost 250% of GDP. And interest rates, the government could borrow money for 10 years on the 10-year Japanese government bond for 0%. So that's the sort of environment we're in. Interest rates will be where the Fed decides it's best that they be, because it controls them entirely. The problem would be if we start to see significant rates of inflation at the consumer price level, the Fed could still hold the interest rates at zero, but then people would lose, in real terms, people would lose money as the inflation eroded away their savings, and people would not be happy about that. That would pose a problem. The Fed would have a hard time holding interest rates at zero if the inflation rate's 5%, and it would be probably, I would think, impossible if inflation moved up to 10%, then they certainly, interest rates would be have to be not too far below. So inflation is the key, and globalization is the key as to whether we'll have inflation or not, not how much money the Fed prints.
Fascinating stuff. Now, hey, Richard, before we let you out of here, your video newsletter is amazing. You've been doing this the last several years. It's called Macro Watch, and you put together some great content and some different perspectives. And tell us about Macro Watch.
Yeah, so thanks. So actually, Macro Watch now has been going on for 6.5 years. Every couple of weeks, I upload a new video, and it is essentially me making a PowerPoint presentation with lots of charts, describing something important happening in the global economy and how that's likely to affect property prices, the stock market, interest rates, commodities, and currencies. And so subscribers to Macro Watch will receive one new video every 2 weeks or so, but they will also have immediate access to all the Macro Watch archives, which have well over 50 hours of videos now discussing everything important that's happened in the global economy for the last 6.5 years. And the archives also include four courses. One is called How the Economy Really Works, now that we are in creditism rather than capitalism, because the rules have entirely changed now. And another is called Capitalism in Crisis. One is called China's Economic Crisis. And then the most recent one is on monetary policy, because monetary policy now has become the most powerful policy tool for the government. So I hope your listeners will check out my website. It's richardduncaneconomics.com. It's richardduncaneconomics.com. And if they'd like to subscribe, if they use the discount coupon code CASH, they can subscribe to Macro Watch for a 50% discount. So hit the subscribe button, you'll be prompted for a coupon code, use CASH, 50% off. And at the very least, you can sign up for my free blog there, and check out things like books I recommend and read the free blogs.
All right, great stuff. And certainly appreciate that discount to the listeners. So to get all that information, really easy, just send an email to macrowatch@realestateguysradio.com or go to Richard's site and enter the keyword cash. Thank you, sir, for your incredible wisdom and for sharing it with us today.
Well, thanks. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Let's do this again sometime.
Well, there you have it. When we come back, you're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia Top 100 Most Influential Financial Advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
In uncertain times like this, it's great to know there are two things you can always count on. High demand for affordable single-family homes to live in, and Terry Kerr's amazing Memphis team at Mid-South Home Buyers to find, fix, and manage the next addition to your recession-resistant real estate portfolio. The Memphis market is logistics and distribution dynamo with an economic engine that's essential to moving goods and critical supplies all over the United States. Quality rehab, proven profitable property management, affordable rents, and solid ROI make turnkey property investing through Terry's team a dream when it matters most. To learn more about Memphis and Mid-South home buyers, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hey, this is John Asraf, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio show. We're so glad you tuned into the program, and oh my gosh, awesome to hear from Richard Duncan.
Yeah, Richard's a smart guy, and he's got a big perspective. And I think, to me, one of the things, and it's not to be an alarmist or a doom and gloomer, but you got to be pretty naive not to realize that we're probably on the front end of a potentially extremely challenging time. And it doesn't mean there won't be opportunities. We're optimistic guys. We think there will be, and we're busily looking at how we're going to develop that. But to figure out how you're going to navigate it, the first thing you really got to do is get the lay of the land. And, you know, when he talked about how the Great Depression, some of the factors that led up to the Great Depression, but even more, the factors that grew out of the Great Depression. Talked about the rise of Hitler. He talked about the rise of the Japanese. You know, that a little bit personal to me, because when the Japanese invaded the Philippines, my grandfather was living there with my father. And he was a guerrilla fighter, and he was part of the resistance. And he saw some of the atrocities that were created when those types of totalitarian regimes come into power. And so, you know, you don't want to be political on a show like this because it's not about politics, but we have to admit that politics, geopolitics, do trickle down onto Main Street, affect your investing, not just the financial markets, but literally the entire system and the freedoms that you cherish that give you the ability to create wealth. Now, I'm not saying anything like that's going to happen, but I'm saying that right now is a good time to start paying attention to history and to current events, look for the corollaries, look for the differences. One of the other things he talked about is like, hey, capitalism is the way it used to be. This system is really creditism. It used to be based on production and savings, and now it's based on consumption and spending and borrowing. Very different system. I hear people talk all the time about the way it was in the Depression. Well, the way it was in the Depression was a different financial system than the way it has been since 1971. We're living in a very unique time in history, and in this case, right now, we're facing unprecedented things, which means there's no template. There's no blueprint. We're going to have to speculate a little bit and draw upon history and also some common sense and a lot of different perspectives to try to figure out where this is all headed and how to play it.
Well, and Richard said he expects $10 trillion to be the number. It could go way beyond that. And as more and more money is printed, what's that going to do? Not just in the U.S., by the way. So the big picture is, how do you react as an investor? And one of the greatest tools that you have to be able to hang on and to be able to be on the right side of these things is to own productive real estate. Real estate is a hedge against both deflation and inflation. Real estate is a way that you can hedge a declining dollar. Real estate has been the way that most people either make their money or hold their wealth for years and years and years. And I think it's the right asset at the right time.
Well, and when you add to that the fact that we are in a debt-centered, debt-driven financial system, you can't escape debt. You can't be debt-free. If you don't borrow, Richard said this, if you don't borrow and spend, the government is going to borrow and spend on your behalf.
Right.
And they're either going to tax you directly to pay for it, or they're going to tax you through inflation to pay for it. So there's no escape. And so rather than try to figure out how can I become debt free, I think what you need to figure out is how can I use debt to outpace the devaluation of the currency. Real estate is the ideal asset for that because it allows you to put 20 cents on the dollar on a piece of property, use debt, which effectively allows you to short the dollar and acquire the very income streams you need to service and hold the debt while the Fed and the people who are devaluing the currencies do what they do. And of course, as we wrote about way back when, equity will happen to you when you do that. The key is just maintaining those cash flows so that you can keep control of the debt. And that's where your market due diligence and good property management and all that comes into play.
Hey, if you enjoyed listening to Richard Duncan, there's a lot more to come in our Crisis webinar series. If you haven't yet signed up, just send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com. We went into great depth with Richard on that. And then also, you can send an email to macrowatch@realestateguysradio.com. You'll get access to Richard's books and also that discount code if you'd like to subscribe to what he does. Big thanks to Richard Duncan for taking time out of his busy schedule at a very different time of the day than we were in, that's for sure. But great to hear from him. Next week on the show, more awesomeness. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.